This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Election Day is a week from today, and the latest poll from Mason-Dixon shows Republican incumbent Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin tied with his Democratic challenger, Attorney General Andy Beshear. The Attorney General joined Cincinnati Edition for a one-on-one interview ahead of next week's vote. You will hear that coming up. Bevin's campaign, however, never responded to our repeated requests for an interview. But in the interest of fairness, Cincinnati Edition has excerpted a portion of a recent forum that Bevin attended at the Kentucky Association of Counties. It was recorded by Kentucky Public Radio. You'll hear Bevin address issues like the ailing pension system and needed funding for infrastructure projects, as well as what he believes is needed going forward for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Let's listen.
It's not an easy task by any stretch to be an elected official, especially at this time in America. This is a politically squirrely time, to say the very least. And it is a difficult time when we have, especially in some of your counties, some brutal budgets and difficult decisions that have to be made. And there's, for every $10 worth of genuine need, you only have a dollar or two or three or five or maybe eight, if you're lucky, to go around, which means something doesn't get the money that it needs. And so this isn't going to change any time in the next immediate days, weeks, and months ahead. But we are faced, literally 2 weeks from yesterday, with a pretty profound decision. You have a choice between myself and somebody who was very properly introduced as someone who chose not to be here. And that's literally what you have as a choice. The same thing has happened with any number of other groups, KLC and others, where frankly those of you that a governor is responsible to, and those of you to whom a governor has a responsibility to work closely and to listen to, have been getting basically given short shrift by somebody who wants to be the next governor. And he's thumbed his nose repeatedly, which, frankly, it seems odd to me. I'll leave it at that, other than to say we are at a fork in the road, and we can continue to move in a direction that we have for the last 2, 3, 4 years in particular, as we've begun to unwind 95 years' worth of an approach to things and start to move in a different trajectory, where we listen to you, where you have more say in everything from discretionary road dollars to the ways in which health plans are administered in your health departments are administered in your community to whatever the case might be. You've been coal severance dollars, pension issues, all these things. So many in this room have been in my office. And for those of you that have served more than 4 years, you know for a fact you've never, ever had the kind of access to a governor that you had in the last 4 years. And truth be told, this is what you should expect. This is what it should look like. You should expect to hear from the governor, to be able to sit down with and with members of my team. And you take a look at what has happened in the last 4 years as we've taken a different approach. Not a perfect one. There is no perfect approach. There's no perfect emissary for anything that even if we were all in agreement on, making sure that it gets done, we wouldn't all agree as to how it got done. But take a look at what's happened in the last 4 years. 57,000 new jobs, a record level of job creation in any one term. A record level of capital investment in this state, more than $22 billion in private capital. We've never even had in any 10-year period that kind of capital invested in this state. A record level of addressing issues like bridges and other things that have been getting derelict for years. There's state parks, so many other issues. These kind of things have changed. We've had record levels of low unemployment, record levels of people actually going to work, including the workforce participation, those eligible to work who actually do so. We've done this while cutting our taxes, personal and corporate taxes, by 17%, and even in spite of that, still having record levels of revenue for this state. And on top of this, record levels of exports, products being made here and sent to the world at levels the likes of which we have never seen historically. Has it come with bumps and bruises? You bet. Will there be bumps and bruises in the next 4 years under my administration? You bet. And I'll tell you why, and we'll talk about it. It's because we're not kicking cans down the road that people have kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked for decades. And you know this. And none of it's easy. It would be great for me to sit up here like the fellow who, if he were here, would be doing, as he's done the occasional time he's shown up. Everyone's going to get pay raises. Everyone's going to get budget increases. Everyone's going to get this, that, and the other thing. And all this money's magically going to appear from somewhere. And he's going to do this all in opposition to the supermajority legislature of another party who've made clear that the things he thinks he's going to get, he's not going to get. He's going to do this in direct opposition, he says, to the president of the United States, very proudly saying he's going to work to fight the president. I'm just telling you, it's not good for your county, and it's not good for our state. We have not fixed the pension problem in the state. We haven't. And I, you know, it pains me as much as it does you to bring that back up again. But trust me, it's not fixed. It's the worst funded pension system in America. It has to be fixed. We have recently made incremental changes as it relates to our quasis. I was speaking to somebody out in the hall about the appreciation for the health departments, what it means for them, the behavioral health departments, our regional universities. These are incremental steps. They are helping, but they've not fixed the problem. We still have $60+ billion in unfunded liability. And I keep hearing people say, oh, it's less than that. Nonsense. It's actually arguably more than that. We're assuming rates of return that we've not historically gotten, and I wouldn't bet that we're going to get, but let's say that we do, it's about $60 billion. If we get what we would expect to get, like maybe a 30-year Treasury note, it's more like $85 billion, which is 7-8 times the amount of money coming in any given year if 100% of it went to paying for an obligation for people already retired. It is a big problem. It is going to be an issue that whoever the next governor has to deal with has to deal with. It doesn't matter who the next governor is. Doesn't whether they think there's a problem or not. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether they want to face it or not. It is going to affect every single one in this room. And that is going to be something I'm going to continue to take point on, as I promised to do 4 years ago. Because we've got to take it head on, because it's going to decimate you and the people who work for you and with you and the people who provide services in your counties if we don't do so. We have to modernize our tax code. We have to bring ourselves in a more competitive relationship with the states around us. We need to move from more of a production-based economy to a consumption-based economy. Stop taxing the job creators and the wealth producers. Let them keep the money, redeploy it, and we'll tax it then. That's how it gets done. Let them build things with that money. Then indeed we'll tax it, and your school districts will benefit from that. Let them redistribute it in the form of pay to individuals that work for them, or to hire additional people, or to expand their operations. And those dollars will circulate through the community and be taxed. This is the kind of thing that has made other states around us competitive relative to us. And this is the types of things we're going to have to do. We'll come back, I hope, to talk in more specificity as to what my thoughts are on taxes. Adoption and foster care. We've got to fix this. We have 4.5 million people in this state. We have 10,000 kids in foster care. 2,500 of them are eligible for adoption. Some of them are in every single one of your counties. It is wrong of us to, in a state of 4.5 million people, blessed as we are, not to be able to find open hearts and homes to bring in 2,500 of our own kids. Because we know what happens when these kids age out. They end up being part of your overcrowded jail system. They end up in recidivist rates of poverty and homelessness. They end up in abusive situations. These are not things that we would any of us wish for. These are statistical given realities. Kids that age out at 18, by the age of 19, 31% have already been arrested. 54% will never get a GED or a high school diploma. More than half will end up chronically homeless over the course of their lives. 70% of all the people in your jails, or all the jails in America, 70% came out of the foster care system. 81% of the people in America on death row came out of the foster care system. And we wonder why we are wrestling with billions and billions of dollars trying to put broken adults back together, but we're failing them when they're on our watch. We shouldn't be raising children, but we are. And we have a collective responsibility starting at the local level all the way on up, including at the federal government level, where I'm working with them to make this a national level topic of discussion. There's not enough beds or dollars at the bottom end to put these broken adults back together again if we allow them to break on our watch. We need to have conversations about local option sales tax. I'm not saying I'm for it or against it. I'm not saying you are for it or against it. I'm just simply saying, let's have a conversation and put that on the table. What it would require is the legislature, the governor's not involved in it, the legislature would decide to put it on the ballot. If the ballot then is put out there in an even numbered year and we, the people, decided we wanted to change the Constitution, then in turn it would go back to local ballots, where in turn people could decide at the local level that they want to put an extra tax on themselves because they trust their local officials to do it wisely. There's three different steps over the course of multiple years. That should at least be a topic of conversation. Let's put that into what we're calling our comprehensive tax package. How can we move away from a production-based into a consumption-based economy? by slowly but surely removing our income taxes on people and corporations and moving it to more of a broader, wider, flatter consumption tax. The consumption tax is sales tax. Now, here's what I'll tell you. The one thing I haven't said yet, so before I put numbers on consumption, for example, let's talk about another big issue. The road tax, the dollars needed to put dollars into infrastructure in your communities has to happen. Here's what I know. The amount of money that is needed in our communities, just in our existing road fund, things that truly have been asked for and are worthy of consideration, it's about $14 billion already. Of those, maybe a third of them are high enough priority that if we had the money to do right now, we should. We don't have $14 billion. Gracious. We got one-tenth of that typically on an annual basis. So where is that money going to come from? The toll credits are gone. Our ability to draw down monies. The federal government, the days of them paying entirely for projects, gone. The federal government has said that on a going forward basis, they may pay 20% of a project, which means 80% has to be P3 or local dollars. So where's that money going to come from? You couple that with the fact that the gas tax, which generates about $31 million for every penny, 2, 3, 4 cents isn't going to cut it. 10 cents isn't going to cut it. I'm not proposing that it has to be this, that, or the other thing, but we need to have an honest conversation about this. And think about this. It doesn't matter whether it's 2 cents, $2.02, or something in between. The people that are unhappy are going to be unhappy. They just are. And think about this. I'll do it by dimes, and you could multiply it by, you know, whatever number you want. But let's say somebody had a vehicle that got 15 miles to the gallon. Let's say they drove 75 miles a day. That's better, worse mileage than most people have and fewer miles than most people drive. But at 15 miles to the gallon, 75 miles a day, for every 10 cents, it's 50 cents a day. There's no one in Kentucky whose life is going to be ruined for 50 cents a day. It's not going to happen. So all this, the sky is going to fall and lives are going to, people are going to stop buy medicine and food, nonsense. If it was 20 cents, it's a dollar. If it's 30 cents, it's a dollar 50. Nobody's life is being, people will drive that same fuel inefficient vehicle into a Starbucks drive-thru and spend $5 on one cup of coffee on one day. The reality is this, nobody's life is going to end. And so at the end of the day, these are, again, I'm not, what the number is, we need to have an honest conversation about, but that too needs to be in a comprehensive tax package. These things have to be talked about in 2020. We cannot keep kicking them down the road. When I was elected, we had $6 billion in deferred maintenance on bridges alone. We are in the process of fixing 1,000 bridges. It'll probably be more like 1,200. We've already let 400 in some of those. 100 and some are already done. You're seeing it happen. So whether it's the road dollars, whether it's the inventory tax, whether it's the death tax, whether it's the local option sales tax, whether it's income taxes versus consumption taxes, these things all have to be put on the table and put in there. And I say this with all respect to the one guy that I'm running against who didn't think you were worthy of his time to show up. He does not understand these things. And it's not, he just doesn't. He has no life experience at all. He has never created a job in the private sector. He literally knows nothing about this. And so either he or I are going to be sitting down at the table with you and having these conversations. Think wisely about that. You may not like me. You may not think I'm your guy, but I'm telling you what, one of the two of us is going to sit down and it better be somebody who understands this issue or our state is in a world of trouble. And the final thing I'll say on this to bear in mind, every single penny on the sales tax, if you went up 1 cent on the sales tax, that generates more than about $650 million. So think about that. For just one extra cent, you could generate four times everything that it costs, three times, and then some, everything that it costs us for all the inventory tax, for all of the death tax. Three times that for a single penny. You could replace all that for less than half a penny. So think about these things. These are not insurmountable. But the final thing I'll say on this, and I know I'm probably over here, the final thing I'll say is this. The only long-term solution is to have more people living here. The end of World War II, Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky, we had the same population. We were bigger than one, smaller than the other, but we were all almost exactly the same. Now, 75 years later, we're 4.5 million people. They, with less arable land, less, you know, quality seasons, less everything. They've got 6 to 7 million people. Could you imagine if we had 2 million more people? We need to build an environment, a tax structure, and otherwise, inventory or infrastructure to attract the next 2 million people here so that they will stay here, live here, pay taxes here. That's the only way we climb out of these problems that we're dealing with. We need another 2 million people. We have room for them, and every one of your communities will benefit. We're starting to see that trend happen, but we got to continue on the path that we're on. We all want better roads. We want better infrastructure. We want to repair things. We want to build new things. The only way we're going to get it is if we pay for it. And I love it when people accuse me, well, you're proposing things that'll cost more money. Yeah, guess what? When you walk into a grocery store and you walk out without paying for your milk and bread, it's cheaper than if you actually go to the counter and pay for it. That's true. That's true. And a lot of people who've stood in this office have, through the years, including the guy I'm running with, free health care, free, you know, pay raises, free funding, free everything. But who's going to actually pay for it? Someone eventually has to go to the register and actually pay for this stuff. So if we want these things and we do, and if we need these things and we do, we're going to have to pay for it. So we're going to have to see something at the gas pump, something addressing electrical vehicles and or what have you. I mean, there's going to be we don't have enough of them, but we can't be oblivious to the fact that that's starting to change. We are going to have to pay for it. So what do I propose? I propose a very honest conversation about this. And the last thing I'll say on this is the following. If we try to do that in isolation, it will not happen. It won't. Think about this. We had Sal Santoro, and I applaud him for doing it, brought forward and couldn't even get out of committee. The idea of bringing a 10 cents wasn't going to be enough, truth be told, by itself, and yet that couldn't even get out of committee. We are going to have to pay for this somehow. We need to have an honest conversation about how to do it. And if we try to do it by itself, everybody with a shotgun that hates any kind of new tax on anything will line up. If we release all these things I've mentioned about taxes are all like rabbits. And if we release those little rabbits one at a time, everybody with a shotgun is going to sight in on that little sucker, and it stands no chance. The only chance we have, and this may sound like a bad analogy, is we need to unleash all the rabbits at once. And I'm not kidding. Because think about this. If we let 10 rabbits out of a bag at once, I don't care what kind of a shot you are, you may not get anything if you try to shoot at 10 rabbits. You won't. I'm telling you. I don't know if you've ever rabbit hunted. One rabbit's a lot easier to hit than 2 or 3 or 10. There have to be things that touch every corner of Kentucky so that massive projects like the Brent Spence Corridor that affects everyone in the Kentucky, whether they realize it or not, and that nobody wants to be for because it's not in their backyard except those for whom it is in their backyard, that still has to be done. So too does the project in Henderson-Evansville. So too do other major infrastructures, whether it's the Mountain Parkway or other bypasses and things. They have to be done. But there needs to be enough in a comprehensive package to spend billions in every other community to ensure that this project gets done. Guess how many people are paying into Kentucky's retirement plans for every one person drawing out? Less than one. It's already over. It's inverted. I've lived in this state for 20 some years now, and it has been broken since I got here. It is not mathematically or financially or actuarially possible for us to promise future employees the same thing that current and past employees have gotten if any of them expect to get it. It is not possible. That's just a hard, brutal reality. There's not enough people paying in. There's not enough tax dollars we're going to squeeze from people before they leave, which means we have to change the structure for future employees. That is the only way to save the system. The pension there's never in the history of America been a pension system as poorly funded as ours that did not fail. Please hear that. Never in the history of the world has a defined benefit plan been as severely underfunded as ours currently is that did not fail. We are trying to save something that may or may not even be possible to be saved. And the only way to do it, with the 10 seconds I have left, I'll reiterate, the only way to do it is to change it structurally for future employees and to ensure that future governors and legislatures for the next 30 years break the 60-some billion into 30ths and pay it $2-plus billion a year for the next 30 years. It's the only way it's going to be saved. And anyone who tells you otherwise either doesn't understand it or is lying to you. And if we do these things, I'm telling you, we are a crown jewel in the crown of America. And we as a state have never been as respected. We've never had a president, vice president, cabinet secretaries care about us, listen to us, copy and emulate things that we're doing here ever. And if we dust this thing off for the next 4 and 14 and 40, there is no state in America with more upside potential than the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Let's make it happen.
And that was Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin speaking last week to the Kentucky Association of Counties. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Andy Beshear is the Attorney General in Kentucky, one of only two Democrats elected statewide back in 2015. Now he's hoping for a promotion and to follow in the footsteps of his father, two-term Democratic Governor Steve Beshear. The first-term Attorney General is tied with Republican incumbent Governor Matt Bevin, according to that latest poll from Mason-Dixon. Beshear joined me in the studio earlier. Attorney General Andy Beshear, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, this race in Kentucky has garnered some national attention in recent days with the news that President Trump and Vice President Pence plan to make some late stops on behalf of your opponent, Governor Matt Bevin. Some media outlets, even like CBS, are analyzing whether a Democrat can win in what they call deep red Kentucky. What do you think the state of politics in Kentucky right now indicates about the rest of the country at this moment?
Well, I think that this race is not about what's going on in the White House, but what's going on in your house, the houses of your listeners. It's about those kitchen table issues that keep us up at night, that give us anxiety. It's about public education. Are your kids getting the education they need? And can public education survive another 4 years of Matt Bevin? It's about pensions, the promise we made to 200,000 public servants. It's about jobs and the need for good jobs, jobs you can raise a family on. And it's about health care. I'm fighting for a future where pre-existing conditions are covered. But right now, both this governor and the federal government are trying to tear that coverage away. What's going on in Kentucky right now is that our challenges are too fundamental to get caught up in anything going on nationally or to get caught up in this divide between Democrats and Republicans. It's time we come together and elect a governor that can move us forward together and address those challenges that'll help every single Kentucky family.
You know, as a media outlet, we subscribe to a lot of the campaigns and their emails, and sometimes reluctantly, because we get bombarded with those emails each morning. But we did get one just today from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the former White House press secretary for President Trump. She had sent an email on behalf of the Bevin campaign today, and she said, quote, "As you know, Governor Matt Bevin is the top target for radical liberals this year. They and their fake news media allies have targeted him because of the amazing progress that he has made in his first term as governor. That's why Matt Bevin needs your support now." And this was the line that I wanted to bring up to you. "Can you chip in $25 to defeat Andy Beshear and the radical socialists like AOC?" That's a reference to New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So I'm wondering how you, as a Democrat in Kentucky, are balancing your campaign against some of these nationalized Democrats, nationalized by the media and their opponents, who may be further left than you, and how you keep undecided voters who may not like those people, like Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, from moving away from you.
This is the politics of distraction. Matt Bevin knows that he can't win on a disastrous record of attacking our teachers, calling them names like thugs, and accusing them of causing harm to children. He know he can't win on a record of trying to tear away health care from 95,000 people that have it for the very first time. He knows he can't win on a record where 82% of jobs he claims he created were in just two cities, which means everybody else in this state has been left out. And he knows he can't win on a record of trying to illegally cut the pensions of 200,000 public servants. So what does he do? He tries to hide behind anybody and everybody that he can. He tries to take this race and make it about things that it's not about. Here's what I know. Kentucky is struggling. We should be doing better. Our wages have been flat, and our people deserve more. They deserve better, and they deserve an example of decency coming out of this governor's office.
But what are your thoughts about President Trump and Vice President Pence coming to Kentucky on behalf of your opponent? They're still popular in Kentucky. They may be facing some problems nationwide, but President Trump is still popular in Kentucky.
But I think it shows you just how weak this governor is. I mean, he has had 4 years to build a record he could run on, but you don't hear him talking about it. It's because his record is one of attacking our educators, of tearing away health care, and of failing to create good jobs that can get our families ahead. I'm going to be the type of governor that governs for every Kentuckian, that doesn't divide us like this governor does into an us and a them, but realizes there can only be a we, and we can only move forward together. I'm going to be laser focused on issues like public education, pensions, health care, and jobs that are good for every Kentucky family and lift all of us up. I'm tired of having a governor that tries to make people pick sides and only governs for one side. Let's have a governor that puts Kentucky first and governs for all of us.
One of the key issues in this race is education. And we know about the governor and his rocky relationship with the state's teachers. But the new system for assessing schools and their school districts was released in recent days. And we're still not seeing a lot of positive movement in schools and districts, particularly rural districts and schools and low-income districts and schools. How do we fix that so that we see more improvement in districts like Covington and like Newport?
I believe every Kentucky child deserves a world-class public education. But that system right now is under attack by this governor. He's not only spent the last 4 years calling teachers names, accusing them of causing harm to students, but he has also underfunded and in some instances defunded public education in critical ways. He claims he's funded public education, but just ask my running mate. Her name's Jacqueline Coleman, and she has been the assistant principal in Nelson County High School for the past several years. Under Matt Bevin's last budget, she had to let go of 10 employees in that school. That means the same number of students showed up the next year, and there were 10 fewer adults. She had her budget for technology and textbooks for kids go from about $140,000 to zero, meaning kids were still learning out of books held together by duct tape. And kids who need technology to compete not just with Indiana but with India had none. We got to have a governor that puts education first. It's why I released my plan on andybashir.com, where every single budget, we're going to take care of public education before reaching any other priority. And we're going to address this teacher shortage. We want to know why some of our schools might be struggling. We have full-year subs because of one of the largest teacher shortages we've ever seen. And that's not surprising. When you have a governor that does not value what our teachers do, you know, this governor thinks they're thugs. I think they're amazing. I'm a Kentucky public school graduate and wouldn't be here without them. We're going to lift up our teachers. We're going to lift up all our educators, and we're going to get our public education system back on track.
But to the parents of students who are attending Covington or Newport schools specifically, two of the lower performing districts in the entire state, and thinking, I don't think my kid's getting a fair shot. What specifically is your plan for the type of school, the type of urban, low-income school, so that they do have a better chance?
Well, every child deserves that world-class education. And when a child is not getting it anywhere at any time, we are failing that child. So what we've got to do is we've got to invest. First, we have to budget in a way that provides the resources for all of our schools, but especially underperforming schools, to achieve. We've got to make sure that we are recruiting the types of teachers and keeping the types of teachers that can make a true difference. We got to make sure that those schools have the infrastructure that they need to compete. Some of our schools are crumbling around the students in them and not creating the type of environment that they need. We've got to make sure that schools have the type of technology that our kids need to compete in this 21st century. And when you look at what happens when a governor like Matt Bevin does not properly fund public education, it's schools like the ones you're talking about that suffer. We're going to be a governor that knows that those are some of our most important schools and gives them the type of funding and attention they need. But let me be clear. This governor tries to take over school systems that aren't performing. School systems don't need an adversary. They need an ally. People should be coming from Frankfort to offer resources and help and expertise and not trying to put a commissioner of education that's never been a principal, much less a superintendent, in charge. I'm going to give this state a brand new board of education on my first day as governor. Matt Bevin has appointed people that care more about for-profit charter schools than our kids. I'm going to make sure we have a Board of Education that cares about every single child and knows we've got to invest in public education to get the type of progress we need.
I want to talk about some Northern Kentucky-specific issues, one related to jobs. You know, there have been a lot of announcements of some significant companies landing in the Northern Kentucky area, particularly in Boone County, Amazon, to name one, several airlines expanding that way. A lot of the positions that are going to be offered to Northern Kentuckians, they're not great wages, right? But these are companies that still receive incentives from the state. What do you think of the current system? What will you do to reform it to ensure that when we have loads of new jobs coming into the region, that they're the types that a family can grow with?
I think that question shows one of the biggest differences between me and this governor. I believe he's for the out-of-state CEO. I'm for our Kentucky workers. I believe that if you work a hard week, if you put in your time and your effort, you ought to make a fair wage where you can raise your family working just that one job. You know, I know a teacher named Laura who has to drive an Uber at night just to pay the bills. That's wrong. I mentioned that in a debate last week. Matt Bevin said that's America and acted like it's a good thing. We are going to be done giving tax incentives to companies that create cut-rate jobs in Kentucky. Those are our taxpayer dollars. We have to invest them in ways that create those six-figure jobs of the future, where you can grow up in a community, work in a job in that community, and raise your family working just that one job. And let's look at ways that Kentucky can be a national and an international leader. Areas like agritech. Now, the UN estimates we've got to increase our food supply 70% in the next 30 years just to feed the world's population. That's why agritech is one of the fastest growing industries in America. Investment increased 80% just last year, but only one other state, Iowa, is investing in a way that we can. We can be an international leader in the technology that's going to power agriculture in the future. Look at advanced manufacturing. You know, we've got manufacturing jobs all across Kentucky, but if we're not a leader in AI and robotics, somebody loses a job on a line every single day. Let's make sure that we are investing in the types of companies that's going to put us at the forefront, and then there's healthcare. And I don't think there's a bigger difference between me and this governor than our view on healthcare. I believe it's a basic human right, but it's also one of the fastest growing parts of our economy. And his positions on everything from eliminating mandatory coverage for pre-existing conditions to trying to roll back expanded Medicaid threatens the growth of our healthcare industry everywhere and would shut down virtually every rural Kentucky hospital. I'm not going to let that happen.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking with Kentucky Attorney General Andy Beshear. He's the Democratic nominee for governor this year. General Beshear, on your way over to Cincinnati, you may have crossed the Brent Spence Bridge today. I don't know if you did or not.
I did.
Yes, so can't let you leave without some questions about that. This was a big priority for your father, who was governor during his two terms, and we weren't able to get it done despite some bipartisan cooperation between him and Republican governor at the time of Ohio, John Kasich. Is this project a priority for you?
Well, our infrastructure in Kentucky is absolutely critical to creating and maintaining the types of jobs that we need. And in this region, the infrastructure, and including the Brent Spence Bridge, is absolutely critical to the economy of Northern Kentucky. What I'm going to do that this governor doesn't is listen. I'm going to make sure that I listen to our Northern Kentucky citizens, our Northern Kentucky legislators, to be able to bring people together in a way to where we can move forward on this project. We need consensus and support around how to get it done, because we absolutely have to get it done. But right now, we've got a governor that refuses to listen at any point to anyone. I'm going to be that governor that listens more than he talks, that's able to bring people together, and we are going to get that project moving, because it's a threat to safety every single day we don't take the steps that we need to.
Has your campaign developed a plan to pay for that project yet? It's very expensive. You hear different numbers, but roughly $2.5 billion is thrown around a lot.
Well, I think what we have to do is to listen to the community, both on this side of the river, meaning the Kentucky side, as well as the Ohio, and to be able to sit down governor to governor with Mike DeWine and hammer out those details. The last time that was able to happen was between Indiana's governor and the last, I hope the guy that was the last governor, Beshear. It was about ensuring that the communities that would be most impacted, that those that are one paycheck away from falling into poverty aren't harmed in a way that prevents them from getting to their job. It was about making sure that we had the infrastructure needed to increase commerce and to ultimately help the area thrive. And I believe that we can do all of those things, but we can only do it with a consensus where the people of Northern Kentucky believe their governor's listening to them and fighting for them.
One other situation that is unique to Northern Kentucky and other border communities around the state are that sometimes the neighboring states have moved forward on issues that some in Kentucky would like to move forward on, specifically expanded gaming, Indiana and Ohio, right across the street.
Yes.
From us. Both have expanded casino opportunities. Ohio has opportunities for medical marijuana.
Yes.
How do you bring Kentucky up to speed on those two issues?
Well, I believe that both of those issues and funding from them are critical to Kentucky and critical to our pension system. You know, a pension is a promise. It's a promise that we've made to thousands of teachers, police officers, firefighters, social workers, people we don't pay enough, but we have promised them a solid retirement. And right now, the amounts owed to our pension system are crippling for this state. Matt Bevin first attempted to illegally cut retirements, and I stopped him. And now, he's putting all those costs on our cities and counties that are looking for taxes that they can be raised on our citizens. I believe that we need new dedicated sources of revenue that go directly to the pension system, and that's how we're going to pass expanded gaming. I mean, you look at other states are eating our lunch. I mean, whether it's Indiana and Ohio with casino gaming, whether it's Tennessee with sports gaming, we lose out on more than $550 million of taxable revenue every year that should be going into our pension system. I think it's time for medicinal marijuana. And I didn't get there lightly. I'm the top law enforcement official in Kentucky. But opioids, I do not believe, work for long-term pain, and they are highly addictive, and we are stocking people's medicine cabinets, leading to accidental addiction of so many children. I believe that we got to stop giving out tax incentives to companies that are creating cut-rate jobs. And I believe that there are some loopholes in our tax system. Like if you buy a private jet in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, you don't have to pay sales tax. I think if you can buy that jet, you can afford to. I believe that if we push all of those changes, but we tie them directly to funding our pension system, something that would make our bond rating go up, our costs go down, and get us back on the path to solvency without raising anybody's taxes, then yes, we will finally pass it.
Okay, so you've got a lot of plans.
Yes.
And a lot of hopes for the state should you be elected governor.
I call that vision.
But the reality is, you would be a Democratic governor next year with a very Republican General Assembly to face and a possibility of facing a Republican in your current position as Attorney General. How will you accomplish these things under those circumstances?
Well, first, let's admit that this governor can't get along with his own General Assembly, despite that they are all of the same party, that we have seen more infighting than ever before. And we saw a governor who called a special session with 3 hours notice without talking to leadership that are supposed to be in his own party. We are going to move forward, and we're going to do it in a couple of ways. First, we're going to tone down this rhetoric. This constant us against them, none of us move ahead with those types of clashes. And I, as governor, with that bully pulpit, knowing that it should never be used to bully, which is how Matt Bevin uses it, it should be there to bring us together, to bring out the best in us and to expect the best in us. And I'm not going to engage in this type of back and forth clashes that we have seen in the recent years. But then I'm going to work to build real relationships with folks in the General Assembly. Your listeners don't wake up each morning being Democrats or Republicans. They wake up being moms and dads, members of a community that have needs, whether they're infrastructure or other, that aren't partisan or political at all. And by building those relationships, understanding where people are coming from, sharing things that you have in common, it could be sports, you could have kids that are the same age, we can realize what areas of compromise that we have and how we can move forward together. What I'd love to see is for us to change the way we do these legislative sessions in Kentucky. Because right now, they always start with the issue they disagree on most and that Kentuckians disagree on most. What if we started each session with 15 bills that everybody agrees on? And we spent the first week debating the nuances of how to make it better, how to make it more effective, to make sure the law worked. If we could pass 15 bills together, I believe we could do a lot better in the areas we disagree on as well.
Andy Beshear is the Attorney General in Kentucky and the Democratic nominee for Governor of the Commonwealth. Thanks so much for stopping in and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
And that was Kentucky Attorney General Andy Beshear speaking with me earlier. Beshear and Bevin debate this evening at Northern Kentucky University in an event produced by WLWT. We've got analysis of this race coming up next. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. You've heard from Governor Matt Bevin, and you've heard from his Democratic challenger in Tuesday's election next week, Attorney General Andy Beshear. So let's break down the state of the race. I'm joined now by Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Political Science, Ryan Salzman. Dr. Salzman, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So we just heard from both candidates. And this happened about a week after this poll came out from Mason Dixon, a well-respected polling firm that suggests this race is as tight as it can be, 46% apiece, very few undecideds in that poll. There's also a third-party libertarian candidate polling about 5% or so. What do you think the state of the race is right now?
I think it's like the poll reflected. I think it's as close as it can be, but it's probably not quite tied. If they were to repoll today, which I'm sure that somebody's been repolling, I imagine that Bevin is starting to kind of eke out into the lead, but that's just my feeling.
I noticed that a lot of the people who speak out against the governor talk about the comments that he's made about educators during the pension reform debate in the state legislature that drew all those, you know, widely covered protest from around the state, teachers flocking to Frankfurt. But what he's doing is not addressing the issue of pensions outside of those forums, like you heard him. His advertising campaigns seem to be pulling at traditional Republican value type policy positions that are vague in nature. So I'm against sanctuary cities. I'm against abortion. I support President Trump. Should we expect that to have some movement in this race?
Well, I think that it's not as much about movement as it is about really shoring up his base, you know, making sure that they're as solid as possible. And most of us, when we're looking at advertising, well, we're really not looking at it, right? It's kind of happening to us in passing. And so, you know, the imagery really matters, you know, single words, policies, those are what matter more. And then the ability for us to make the connections between those policies and kind of proxy them out for other things that we would likely agree with. And so that's what that television advertising, why that's so different than, say, the clips that we heard. I was at the Kentucky League of Cities conference a couple weeks ago when he spoke there as well, and he dug much deeper into policy. But most of the advertising is going to be really appealing to that base because he is not well-liked in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And so he has to get all of his base to turn out, 100% of them. And so making those appeals, those guttural appeals, are going to be most important for that turnout for him.
Yeah. When he's at forums, like at the Kentucky League of Cities event that was held in Covington, or the excerpt from his speech at the Kentucky Association of Counties that we heard on this broadcast earlier this hour, he does dive a little more deeply into why he feels it's important to address pension. He says these aren't popular positions, but we have to systematically change the way state employees' retirements are planned. He talks about tax reform. He's talking about tax increases as a Republican and explaining why that's necessary and explaining why that's important. And he does attempt to articulate that message to other elected officials that we saw. Kentucky League of Cities draws municipal people, and the County Association obviously draws members of the various fiscal courts from across Kentucky. But when he's trying to address the rank and file voters, those are what the images show, that if you elect Andy Beshear, you're going to have someone who has the support of Hillary Clinton, AOC, and the anti-Donald Trump pro-impeachment forces. You vote for me, no sanctuary cities, no impeachment of the president. And by the way, that is somebody who's looming over this race, yes?
That's
Donald
right.
Trump.
That's right. We will see him in the Commonwealth on Monday. I believe that the president will be at Rupp Arena down in Lexington, and we'll have, I wanted to call him his understudy. That's not fair. Vice President Pence, former governor of Indiana, will be in the Commonwealth as well this Friday. And so, and this isn't just a matter of there's only a few elections and the president likes to attend rallies. It's because he finds a kinship with the governor of Kentucky. He supports him. And so even if this was a year with a lot of elections, I think that it's fair to say that we would see the president making an appearance and speaking out on behalf of Matt Bevin.
President Trump loves a rally. He likes a crowd that supports him. And he has gone on to other states to support this or that candidate that's running for something to shore up Republican support. But the early narrative that emerged when word came out that President Trump would be holding a rally on Matt Bevin's behalf in Lexington the day before the election was that Matt Bevin must be in trouble. But Donald Trump isn't in trouble in Kentucky. He's still very, very popular. More than 2/3% of the state's voters still support him, according to the latest poll that has come out in that respect. So if there are some Republican voters who were maybe on the fence about supporting Matt Bevin again, what are they looking to hear from President Trump to put them back in the Bevin column?
Well, I think that just they're looking for a vote of confidence. And I think that when we look at the polling, that 46 to 7% breakdown, there's a chance that 7%, some of you out there saying 7%, well, that's for the Libertarian candidate. And after the election of President Trump, you may remember, that they had what were called shy Trump voters. And these were people that in polling were not willing to reveal that they were going to vote for President Trump. And so we may have some shy Bevin voters out there. And those individuals are looking for assurances. But likewise, those individuals are looking for, maybe – a little shot in the shoulder to say, we need you. We have to have this happen. You know, whether or not what you feel about Matt Bevin is inconsequential if the alternative is this Attorney General Beshear who's attacking everybody. He's not going to get anything done. And to hear it come from somebody that they trust, and I tell my students this, we talk about it a lot, that we often look to what we call trusted individuals, and a lot of people do trust the president. And so I think that's what individuals who would right now say they support President Trump and not support Governor Bevin, what Governor Bevin is hoping is he's saying, well, good, don't listen to me. Listen to the person you trust and that person saying to vote for me.
President Trump is particularly popular in Eastern Kentucky, and Eastern Kentucky did something strange during the May primary. There were tough primaries for both the Democratic candidates and the Republican candidates, which is unusual for an incumbent governor, especially one whose primary opponent was a little-known state representative, Robert Goforth, who won nearly every Eastern Kentucky County against Matt Bevin. Matt Bevin's going to lose Louisville more than likely. He's going to lose Lexington more than likely. Democrats always try to run up the margins there. But Matt Bevin can't lose Eastern Kentucky against Andy Beshear. So are those the voters that he's mostly targeting with these digital campaigns against sanctuary cities and keeping Kentucky unlike California, as different from California as we can be, and don't vote for Andy Beshear because, you know, Hillary Clinton likes him?
Absolutely. It's kind of classic identity politics, and that's the appeal that's being made. I assume that, like you're saying, that would appeal more in Eastern Kentucky, and that's why those appeals are being made. But just because somebody voted one way in a primary, what's notable there is that they voted in the Republican primary. Presumably, they're a Republican. You know, if you wear a red hat, you tend to support the candidate that wears a red hat. If you wear a blue hat, you tend to support the candidate that wears the blue hat. And so those people, a lot of those would likely fall in line and without a viable alternative. I mean, do we really think that Andy Beshear is going to be able to capture as a viable kind of positive alternative? And by positive, I mean like this is actually somebody that would appeal to voters, that they would, you know, take off their red hat and say, I'm going to support this individual. You know, I doubt that. I doubt that a lot. And then when you add in the Trump factor, so to speak, I think that you really are going to do well because it's about turnout. Both parties, interestingly, are saying this is a turnout election, which I find as somebody who follows politics to be kind of funny that both of them are saying, oh, it's got to be about more turnout. But it's true. What they don't want are those people who were voting for Representative Goforth to not show up. That's what's going to be most important. And again, I think that's what President Trump is coming to town to do. He's coming to make sure that turnout is as high as possible, knowing that if you can get those people to wear the red hat, if you can get them to show up, they're going to pull the lever for Governor Bevin. We don't pull levers anymore, do we?
In Kentucky, we fill in little Scantron sheets.
That sounds right. But figuratively speaking, pull the lever for Governor Bevin.
Governor Matt Bevin and Attorney General Andy Beshear will face off tonight in their fifth and final debate at Northern Kentucky University in an event produced by WLWT. I believe tickets are free, but you have to show up to get one out there in Highland Heights. Doors open at 6 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock?
Be in your seat by 6:30, I believe.
Debate starts at 7. Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Political Science, Ryan Salzman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Find archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.